Welcome, everybody. This is Rochelle, the Right Now Coach, and you're at the Right Now Mastermind class. I'm delighted to have so many of you with us. Today is September 25th, 2013, and we are speaking with K.M. Weiland about scene sequences. Build your book from the ground up. And this is a great class for anybody who's interested in doing National Novel Writing Month. Next month in October, we'll be talking with Angela Ackerman on the Emotion Thesaurus and the Positive Trait Thesaurus, and she'll be talking about building characters. So welcome, everybody. My guest is K.M. Weiland. She is the author of the epic fantasy Dreamlander, the historic Western, A Man Called Outlaw, and the medieval epic, Behold the Dawn. She enjoys mentoring other authors through her website, helpingwritersbecomeauthors.com, her books, Outlining Your Novel and Structuring Your Novel, and her instructional CD, Conquering Writer's Block and Summoning Inspiration. She makes her home in Western Nebraska. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's so exciting to finally meet you. We've been talking on Twitter for a while, so I'm glad to get a to talk to you. Guests, you're going to get a chance to ask questions later in the call, so if you want to mute yourself for now by pushing *6, in about 45 minutes I'll tell you how to unmute yourself. So why don't you start by telling us how you got started writing? You're quite prolific. How did this all begin?
Well, I kind of came into it, I think, like a lot of authors do, kind of backwards, actually. When I was a kid, I was horse crazy, your typical horse crazy girl. I went through several life goal options. I think I wanted to be a veterinarian, and then I wanted to be a horse trainer. And then I had the humble goal of being a world champion barrel racer, which is a rodeo event, for those who don't know. But I've always been fascinated by stories. I think my very earliest memory is when I was something like 3, we were at a family reunion, and I was up in a treehouse, and I was making up a story about how bad guys came and I saved the day, or something like that. So my language has always been stories, and actually how I started writing was just because I wanted to record these stories of mine so that I wouldn't forget them. And then I just sort of fell in love with the whole thing. The craft part of it, the word craft and the story craft, became a love all of its own. So I wrote my first novel when I was 13, I think, and it was about horses and a barrel racer and that kind of thing. I also wrote for about 5 years there on through high school a newsletter called Horse Tales. So during that time, which I definitely consider kind of my apprenticeship in the craft, I wrote something like 150 short stories and 4 novels. So I learned a lot, obviously, just from doing that. And then I stumbled upon my first writing how-to book at the library. It was Gilbert Morris's How to Write and Sell a Christian Novel. And it just transformed the way I thought about writing, because up to that point, it was something I was doing entirely instinctively. I really had no idea that there were rules or guidelines. So I wrote the next novel, my historical Western, Man Called Outlaw, and people really liked it and encouraged me to pursue publication with it. So I did, and it was eventually published in 2006, and that was the beginning for me. I started my blog, Helping Writers Become Authors, really just because all the experts at the time were saying that writers needed to be blogging, and like so many other fiction authors, I couldn't think of anything applicable to be blogging about except writing. So the blog really just became a way for me to talk about writing and to share the things I was learning myself at the time. And then the blog just kind of took off. It's won a couple of awards, and it's pretty much prompted me to write my two how-to books, Outlining Your Novel and the one that just came out here recently, Structuring Your Novel. And I've just been incredibly blessed because they've both done really well. Outlining was actually just recently translated into Korean and Japanese, which was really mind-bending and exciting. So that's pretty much been my writing journey up to this point.
Very cool. So talk a little bit about story structure. Why do you think story structure is important?
You know, I get asked this question a lot, and It's a really good question. It's a really important question that authors should be asking. And I think a lot of authors don't ask it, and I know I certainly didn't, because they're not actually even aware of it, of structure. Storytelling is very instinctive for most of us. We have an idea, we have some characters in our head, and so we sit down and write it. We have a beginning, a middle, and end, and things happen, and there you go. A good guy kills a bad guy, gets a girl, rides off to the sunset, the end. And the interesting thing is that often our story structure isn't that far off the mark. Even when we have no idea how structure works, because what we've come to recognize as the correct structure for a story is deeply foundational to the human psyche. We find the same basic structures across centuries, across continents. It's something that even when it changes subtly here and there to accommodate certain cultures or fads, it still remains inherently the same. And it's this hardwiring into the human brain and soul, I think, that makes structure so powerful. Structure is what allows us to create stories that are shaped to reach their maximum potential for touching readers, for getting under their skins and poking their buttons and just resonating with them. What structure is not is this rigid set of parameters that authors get boxed into. If there's any kind of resistance to structuring among authors, I think that's the big one. We all hear that stories have to fit this specific mold. And when we hear that, we start feeling cramped or limited. We just want to let our stories run free. And it's that wild, kind of unchained creativity, I think, that appeals to most of us. So it can seem really counterintuitive to have to try to make it fit any kind of an external guideline. But here's the thing. Like I said, most writers are already instinctively following structure. It's so hardwired into our psyches, and even more so, after you've spent a lifetime ingesting hundreds of properly structured books and movies, and we just get to the point where we organically understand it. So then whenever we can bring the conscious knowledge and add it to that instinctive understanding, we're only going to strengthen our application. Sometimes we just get this feeling, this instinct that something's wrong in a story. We can tell that something's off. It's just not working how it's supposed to, But we don't know what. We don't know what's wrong. Our instincts are spot on, but we don't have the conscious knowledge to back it up. But if we know story structure, if we understand how pieces fit together and why, then we're able to take a step back and objectively and logically look at what we've got instead of just kind of feeling it out and poking at this and changing that and just experimenting, hoping that we're going to find the right answer. We can apply our conscious knowledge of story structure and immediately see where the trouble lies. So all of that was just to answer your question. But really, the reason story structure is important is, number one, because it shapes our stories into their most powerful potential for resonating with readers. And number two, because it allows us to approach our craft of storytelling from a place of empowered conscious knowledge.
That makes sense. It's like trying to fix your oven when you have no idea how an oven works,
Right.
It's kind of hard to fix your story if you don't know what you're messing with.
Yeah, exactly.
So talk about how you first learned about story structure and how you use this idea of structure or this knowledge about structure in your own writing.
I still get so excited about structure. It has been just such a transformative thing for me in my own writing. Up to the point where it just finally clicked for me, I was in that camp that was actually resistant to the whole idea. I was really an instinctive writer, and I just didn't want to mess with that. I hated the idea that I had to try to squeeze my raw, untamed story ideas into, like I say, this pre-formatted structure. I hated that thought. I thought it was baloney, to be honest. But also, to be honest, at that point, I really had no idea what structure was. I was kind of familiar with the idea of the hero's journey, but that was really about it. And then I started actually looking into and studying the classic idea of the three-act structure, and it just started clicking. I started to realize that structure really isn't this suffocating, super detailed, super confusing list of guidelines for every single scene in my story. So I was starting to really learn the facts about what structure was and how it worked. And this was really the clincher for me. I started looking through some of my own stories and looking for the major plot points and just, you know, kind of seeing how they stacked up against this whole idea. And I was floored because every single one of them pretty much lined up with the correct structure. So I was pretty much sold from that point on. I was able to, you know, kind of retroactively apply a structure to the books I was editing at the time. But I didn't really start reaping the true benefits of structure until I was able to start a new story and build it from the ground up, from an understanding of structure. And I got to tell you, that is an amazing experience. With that first book that I organically structured, you know, from the outline all the way through, it was like night and day. With the two books I'd written previous to that, I ended up having to do massive, painful rewrites. But with this consciously structured approach, everything just lined up right from the beginning. So once I finished the outline, I wrote that first draft in 4 months, which is like lightning fast for me. Usually I think I'm lucky to finish the first draft in 12 months. So it's just that everything worked out. And probably no doubt it was just a story. You know, every story is its own adventure, and some stories are just easier to write than others. But just as another point of comparison, I usually end up with a deleted scenes folder that is bigger than the finished manuscript. With this book, my deleted folder ends up being like only a couple thousand words. So, structure has been a personal paradigm shift for me as a writer. And I'm still just as excited, if not more so, about it today than I was when I first discovered it.
Wow. So talk to us about, like, in a nutshell, kind of the quick version to how structure works for a story as a whole. Go ahead.
Yes, definitely, because this is where it gets good. Okay, so the way I approach and teach the classic three-act structure is by using kind of a 10-point checklist. These are 10 moments in your story, 10 aspects that you need to make sure that, number one, they're in your story, and number two, that they're properly positioned within the story's timeline. And that's it, 10 things. Work those into your story, and you're good to go. So you can already see how this gives you a supportive guidance system, so to speak, while still providing all kinds of freedom for your own creativity. All right, so I'm just going to run through the 10 parts of the structure. So the first act begins with the hook, and we're going to spend the entire first act, the entire first quarter of our book, setting up our story. The first act is where the inciting and key events happen, drawing the protagonist into the conflict, and it's also where we're going to make sure that we introduce all our important characters, settings, and stakes. The first act ends with the first major plot point. This plot point is going to be a definitive event that's going to force your character to react to it. It's something that changes his life. The normal world, whatever that may be, that we've established in the first act is now over, and the character has to regroup and try to find a new balance. He's going to enter the first half of the second act, which will take up the next quarter of the book, and he's going to spend this time reacting to his new plight and trying to regain his bearings. And that's going to last in one form or another right up until the middle of the book, which is also the middle of the second act. And this is where the second major plot point, or midpoint, is going to happen. This is going to be where another definitive event occurs on par with the first plot point. But this time, the plot point is going to force your protagonist out of his period of reactions and into action. So the second half of the second act is where your protagonist is going to begin to come into his own power. He's starting to take definitive action against the antagonistic force. He's growing as a person. His character arc is developing. And he's starting to become someone who can really challenge the antagonistic force's power. And this period of growth and action is going to last right up until the beginning of the third act, right around the last quarter of the book. And this is where the third major plot point hits. This is where your protagonist's actions are going to seem to lead him to a place of defeat. This is going to be a low. Allies are going to die. Things are going to look pretty hopeless. So he's going to have to rise from that low point and enter the third act with new determination. He's going to rally for a final assault against the antagonistic force, and that, of course, is going to come to a peak in the climax, which is going to take place basically in the last 10% of your book. This is where the conflict between the protagonist and the antagonistic force is going to reach a deciding moment one way or the other. And then you're going to finish it off with the resolution. This will be just a final scene or two in which the loose ends are tied up and you show the characters reacting to the events of the climax. And so, in a really small nutshell, that's a whirlwind tour of story structure. So hopefully, you know, people can get an idea of the basics and how it all fits together.
So the 10 points are somewhere in that basic structure.
Right. The ten points are basically, you've got the hook, the first act, the first major plot point, first half of the second act, the midpoint, second half of the second act, major plot point, climax, and resolution.
Perfect. So now, you've been writing a little bit. You wrote on my blog, and I know it's in your book, on scene structure and how the scene structure fits with story structure. So I think this is where it gets complicated, but also really fun. So I'm excited to hear you talk about how scene structure fits into this idea of story structure.
Yes. This is an aspect of story structure that is often overlooked, but it's also a very intuitive concept to grasp. In the post I did for your blog last week, I talked about how scenes can be broken down into two parts, scene and sequel. Scene is where the protagonist is going to be taking action. Sequel is where he's been reacting to what just happened in the previous scene. To maintain credibility and suspension of disbelief, we have to maintain that balance between action and reaction. For every action, there has to be a reaction. So for every scene, there has to be a sequel. And then from there, we can further break our scenes and sequels down into three parts apiece. We break the scene down into goal, conflict, and outcome, or as I like to specify, disaster. And we break the sequel down into reaction, dilemma, and decision. And just real quick, how that works is like this. The scene, which is the action half of our whole, begins with the character having a goal. He has something he wants, and which we then relay to the reader, of course. And this is what's going to drive the scene. Without a character goal, the scene is just going to meander around. It's purposeless. But then that goal has to be met with conflict. And in this sense, conflict is nothing more or less than an obstacle. It's something that's preventing the character from reaching that goal. And then the outcome of the scene is going to be the resolution of that conflict, one way or the other. Either the character reaches his goal, or, of course, he doesn't. I like to put the emphasis on disaster in the outcome, because we don't want our characters to achieve their goals quickly or too easily, because if they achieve too many of their scene goals, then they're going to achieve their story goal, the whole story's over. We don't want our characters, we don't want them on a straight road to their end goal. We want to kind of push them sideways with scenes that end in disasters or half-disasters. So that's your scene. Once you hit your character with that scene-ending disaster, you're going to enter the sequel phase, in which you're going to give him enough space to react to whatever just happened. And once again, the sequel is also divided into three parts, which are reaction, decision, and dilemma. The first thing you have to address in the sequel is your character's reaction. How does he feel about what just happened? What is he thinking? So this is where we establish that our characters are thinking, realistic human beings. And from there, he progresses to dilemma. Whatever just happened, whether it seemed good or bad, is going to create a new problem for him, a new wrinkle in his plan to reach his overall story goal. So he has to analyze his new dilemma. And then based on that, he's then going to make his decision. And basically, that decision is going to translate right into the next scene's goal. Mm-hmm. So you can see how it's all integrally related. It's like dominoes. If you get the basic structure of your scenes set up just right, then every moment in your story is like a train on the track. Every moment perfectly influences the next.
Oh, that's cool. I'm taking notes. I'm engaged. This is great. So now talk about that idea of a train on the track. And I'm thinking about scene sequences. So how do you take your little individual scenes or your little cars and build them together and connect them so that you've got a whole story?
Okay. Yes, this is an important progression of the idea of scene. Because when we're focusing on this microscopic level of scene structure, we can also start to see our scenes very much individually. And this isn't a bad thing by any means, since, you know, as we've basically already seen, we need to focus on the smallest integers of our story so that we slowly build up to a solid overall story. But it's easy to get hung up on the small stuff and start feeling like each scene is maybe living in its own little vacuum, which, of course, isn't the case at all. Every scene, you know, has to be integral to the story. They're like the dominoes. Every scene has to matter to every other scene. And sometimes we're going to want to take that principle, you know, a little farther and create sequences of scenes. So in a nutshell, we can define a series or sequence of scenes as little stories within our story. A sequence is going to have a unified focus and usually one that we can sum up in a simple idea. So for example, your sequence could be about a rescue or a wedding, a trial, a battle, you know, something like that within the overall story. And the other thing about sequences is that they're always going to have a defined beginning, middle, and end. They have a mini plot arc of their own, sort of. So just as an example, let's think about the original Toy Story movie and a sequence in which Buzz and Woody are initially trying to get back to Andy. So they jump out of the van, right, and they're stranded at the gas station. And so then we have a linked chain of several different scenes in which they're doing, you know, various things in their attempt to get back to Andy. They bum a ride on the Pizza Planet truck. They sneak into the restaurant. They spot Andy. And then they get stuck in the claw machine with the little green man. So all of these segments of this sequence are scenes in their own right. You know, we can identify the various properly structured scenes. The characters are faced with a series of dilemmas, which prompts a series of new goals, which are then met with conflict. First, they have to find a way to get to Pizza Planet. Then they have to find a way to get into Pizza Planet. And then they have to locate Andy, you know, et cetera. So you can see how multiple scenes combine into very definite episodes within the story. It's sort of like the little scenes become, in essence, bigger scenes, which then, before you know it, become the entire story. So the key thing to keep in mind here is that character goals within the story can be broken down into smaller goals building up to something. And that's where you get your scene sequences.
Okay. So it sounds like there's kind of like, they're almost like little boulders. So the smallest is the scene or the sequel. And then the next is the sequence. And then that fits into your plot points. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, exactly.
So talk a little bit about how scene sequences fit in or affect the major plot points that you talked about earlier.
Obviously, sequences are just as integral to the overall story as are the individual scenes. So it's one of those things on a very general level where everything affects everything. So well-done sequences can't help but affect the plot points. But more to the point, we do find that more often than not, major plot points are going to be built of sequences rather than just standalone scenes. And this, of course, is for the obvious reason that major plot points are major moments within the story. They're the set pieces, so to speak. They're the big, juicy, interesting moments that readers, you know, they wait the whole book to get to. So we're rarely going to want to just buzz on by those major plot points in a single scene. Those plot points are going to comprise, you know, some pretty big and involved events. And as such, they're probably going to need to take place over the course of several scenes, a sequence. So that's something worth thinking about, you know, as you're planning your major plot points. If an event comes to mind and it's something that you can probably pull off in a single scene, then you might want to rethink that. You know, just dig a little deeper and see if you can find something that's a little more involved, a little more complicated, a little more dramatic. Which isn't to say, I will qualify this, that plot points have to be part of a sequence. You know, certainly some stories, for whatever reason, won't require every plot point to be that in-depth. It's something to study in other people's stories, and also to just listen to your own instincts on. The other thing to realize about the relation between sequences and plot points is that the very length involved in sequences, you know, which can span 50 pages sometimes, allows for a little more flexibility in the timing of the plot points. Generally speaking, we find a plot point at the 25%, 50%, and 75% marks in the story. And some writers obsess about landing their plot points smack on the money. And you pretty much have to do that if you're writing a screenplay. But in a novel, we can pretty much say that if any part of your major plot point sequence lands on its pertinent quarter mark in the story, then you can pretty much safely say that you're good. And this is because the scenes are all connected. They just, you know, kind of roll their momentum like those boulders, one into another. And readers still get the sense of that impact, you know, even if the timing doesn't turn out just perfect.
So you're saying that I'm familiar with Save the Cat. You probably are too. And I know there's Save the Cat calculators where you can, you know, throw your page numbers in there and see if your conflict comes up at the exact right page where it's supposed to. And you're saying we can fudge a little bit with that when it comes to a novel.
Yeah.
You're getting a little feedback, everyone, so if that's you or you think it might be you, go ahead and push *6 to mute your individual line, and that'll just keep it easier for us to hear. Thank you. So we can kind of, with that, we don't have to actually count the percentages or the pages. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, it's just the sheer length of a novel. Okay, you know, screenplays, which are great for learning structure because of this, we can time the plot points pretty much down to the minute in a screenplay. But this is because, I mean, they're working with 120 minutes, where novelists, you know, have upwards of 300 or more pages. So just the sheer length and the fact that transitions are often much lengthier in a novel than they are in a screenplay gives us the ability to, you know, as I say, kind of roll the momentum of one scene into another, so they all kind of glom together into and become the plot point on their own.
Okay. So as you kind of broke this down into the 10-point checklist and talked about scenes and scene sequences, did you make a chart or make any kind of guesstimate or did you do some research on about how many scenes or how many scene sequences are in every story?
Yeah, there absolutely doesn't have to be a specific number of sequences or scenes. Aside from the fact that every novel is going to vary in length and pacing and all of that, we also just have to realize that how an author sequences his story is very much a personal choice. You just kind of have to let the story dictate where you're going and what needs to happen. I just finished reading a book by C.S. Lakin called Intended for Harm, which it's told in the kind of unique format of these 15-minute segments of this family's life over like 30 years. So even though each scene is integrally related to the others, the unique format here means there really aren't a whole lot of sequences. And then you have stories like, say, massive fantasies, thinking like Brandon Sanderson or Patrick Rothfuss, and their books are just full of tremendous sequences in which plans are being enacted or battles are taking place. So you could have, I don't know, you know, 40 sequences or more in a book like this.
And then when you have a sequence, do they have to be a specific length, or can you, I mean, does it depend on genre? How do we kind of think about that?
Yeah, sequences do not have to be any specific length in themselves either. You know, technically a sequence is just more than one scene coming together to form its own little mini narrative. So you could have a sequence made up of two scenes, or like I say, in these big fantasy books, you could have sequences that, you know, go on for 100 pages and contain dozens of scenes. I'm thinking of like the final battle in Brent Weeks's The Black Prism, and this pretty much takes up the entire third act and is made up of just a ton of little scenes, you know, building into a sequence. So it really depends on the book and how fast or slow you want to pace it and how many big set piece scenes you're trying to work with. You know, and just really what the story demands.
That makes sense. So, you know, of course, many of us are sitting here thinking about National Novel Writing Month and wanting to, you know, do in a month what you did in 4 months. And so I think it would be helpful for me, if you're willing, to have you talk us through a little bit how you planned out your novel. What did you do? How much detail did you use? And, you know, just give us some ideas on how the planning helped you and what you did to make it possible to write that fast.
Well, you know, obviously I've written a whole book on this, so, you know, but I'll try to summarize here. Basically, my approach to outlining is the idea behind outlining is that you're working out your problems, you know, on the page before you're actually writing it. Because if you don't have to write, you know, 3 scenes, to figure out, oh, this isn't going to work, you know, you can write 3 sentences in the outline and figure it out. Obviously, you're saving yourself a ton of time. But what I do is I start with a premise sentence in which I try to identify the main characters, the conflict, and thereby the antagonistic force, and just the basic premise. Where's this going? What's the situation? What's, you know, going to happen? So once I know that, and of course, I often come to stories with, you know, several. I have an idea of what I'm going to write about, so I have several scenes. I write those down, and then from there, what I do is I start filling in the blanks. I start connecting the dots, you know, trying to figure out, well, how does this scene lead into this scene? And, well, that's not going to work because this doesn't make sense. How can I make that make sense? And I call that general sketches, and it's pretty much just where I am writing out what I know about the story, asking myself lots of what-if questions, what would be expected, what would be unexpected, and trying at that point where the story is still very fluid and flexible to, you know, plummet for its maximum potential. And then I do very in-depth character interviews, so I know, you know, my characters pretty much inside out, and you can find that in the book. And also you can find a free and printable version of the character interview questions that I use if you sign up for my mailing list on my blog, and you'll get a free ebook called Crafting Unforgettable Characters. So after character interviews, And then I move on to what I call the extended outline. And this is where I'm actually outlining. I number it, and then I just go scene by scene and try to figure out what's going on. And this is where, you know, you can really start building the structure into the outline. Both on a scene level, you know, I always want to identify, you know, is this a scene or is this a sequel? Is the character acting or reacting? And then I go through the three parts of each, of either one, and figure out, you know, what's going on there, which really helps for creating, you know, these solid building blocks so that it makes every scene have not just a purpose, but that they completely fit together. And then also, of course, concentrating on the major plot points in particular. And, you know, just kind of sensing that out as far as timing at that point, but figuring out, you know, what's going to happen at the quarter mark that's going to cause the character to start reacting, what's going to happen at the midpoint that's going to start pushing him into action, and then what's the low point at the third plot point, and, of course, what's the deciding moment in the climax. So I just go through the whole novel, you know, scene by scene, doing that. And then when I'm done, I use a free software program called YWriter, which is, it's kind of like Scrivener, but free. And I type up my notes in that and do what I call an abbreviated outline, where I just type up the pertinent notes and kind of make just a little header. And so I don't have to read the whole outline of every scene to figure out what I need to happen. I can just kind of look at the header and remember. And that's pretty much it. It's just a matter of, you know, you're trying to identify problems before they happen and figuring out where the dead ends are so that you can avoid them when you're actually in the middle of writing that first draft.
Well, that sounds incredibly helpful. And I'll when I send out the email reminding everybody about the link to the recording, I will send out links to your newsletter, sign up, and all that so that they can sign up and get the character list. I know there are a number of people on the call already about your books, so I'm sure they're going to be reading them madly before National Novel Writing Month starts. Well, this is a good time to open it up for questions. And so if you've muted yourself and you'd like to ask a question, all you need to do is push *7 and ask your question. We have about 15 to 20 minutes to talk, and I'm sure that KM would be more than willing to answer your questions. And you can get at things that I've missed. So what are you curious about? What do you need to know to get your novel plotted and structured and ready to go? And again, to unmute yourself, it's *7.
I actually have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Cam, of all of your published novels, which do you feel best embodies what you're teaching us about story structure?
Which of my blog posts?
Which of your published novels?
Well, you know, as I was saying, it's interesting to, you know, look back and realize that even novels I wrote when I really wasn't consciously aware of structure still embodied, you know, it's still structured properly. My personal favorite of all my books is Behold the Dawn, but it kind of depends, you know, really on what, I mean, I would say they're all properly structured, so you would be able to see what I'm talking about. But it kind of depends on what your interest would be as far as, you know, historical or fantasy, that sort of thing.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's a good question. Do you besides reading your novels, do you have a couple of novels that you think are really good examples of story structure that can help us kind of learn?
Well, I will say that, generally speaking, if a book has, you know, gotten past the gatekeepers of traditional publishing, probably it is correctly structured. In the book Structuring Your Novel, I use several examples. In the two that I used, I used two books and two movies. And the books I used were Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice and Orson Scott Card's Ender's Game. So I would, you know, definitely recommend studying both of those.
That's great. Those are great recommendations. And I love using movies as an example for story structure, because
yeah.
I think if it's a challenge for you, then a movie is a great way to break it down.
Yeah, and they're so accessible because you can watch them in 2 hours, and people are much more likely to have seen the same movies than they are to have read the same books.
That's a very good point. Others, do other of you have questions for our guest today?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question. How about when you have multiple characters? Can you say anything about scene structure when you're dealing with like three different storylines in the same novel?
Okay, yes, that's where it gets kind of interesting. You know, this is what I would consider dual timelines. But the thing is about timelines is the structure is basically going to be the same. And there are a couple of different ways that you can approach this. And the first is just to maintain the one structure all the way through. And this is going to be for timelines that are going to directly influence each other. You know, for say like you've got POV characters who may not be in the same storyline, the same plotline, you know, for most of the book, but they're going to meet up at the end. So this would be in an instance where one character's plot point is somehow also going to affect the other character and move his structure of his story forward as well. If you're dealing with timelines that aren't as integrally connected, then you're probably going to have to structure them individually so that you've got, you know, timeline one and timeline two both have individual plot points, which should be timed so that they're, you know, basically right next to each other overall to, you know, to give the reader the impact that they need in actually reading it. But basically, you know, your structuring is the same. It just gets a little more complicated when you have to juggle more people and try to make sure that either, you know, they each have unique plot points or that one plot point is affecting everyone to one degree or another.
Thanks. That's great.
Yeah, yep. Thank you. That's helpful. Other questions? We have plenty of time, and this is your chance. If you are, you know, freaking out about Nano or the novel that you've written and wondering, like, how do I go back and fix it, this is your chance to ask some questions.
Hi, this is John. Hey, Katie. So I'm curious, you know, some people, I think, are more naturally organized and see things in structured pieces. As you know, I'm more of a seat-of-the-pants kind of writer. Have you ever gone and looked at some of the kind of the classic novels from people like Heinlein or John Scalzi, who claim to have written kind of straight through from beginning to end? Are you able to identify the structure that you talk about in their works? Is this something that that a seat of the pants person can adapt to?
Hi, I haven't actually read any of Scalzi, and I can't off the top of my head tell you about Heinlein, but I'm sure that they are structured. And it's, you know, it's interesting. I read a lot of the classic authors, so it's interesting to look back at them in an era, you know, when writing was much less structured in a sense than ours is. You know, they weren't, for the most part, they weren't reading books off Amazon about how to structure your novel, but we look back at them, and they're all, you know, just perfectly structured for the most part. Very few, you know, you'll find that aren't. And again, a lot of this, I think, comes down to just this instinctive understanding that humans have of the pacing needed to create a resonant story. So I would be interested, you know, I've got a Scalzi book on my shelf, and I will, you know, when I'm reading it, I always pay attention to that. You know, but and I will... You know, basically, I will guarantee that it is properly structured, even though he may not have, you know, been consciously aware of it or thinking of it as he was writing it. But you know, even for people who don't want to approach structure head on, you know, from a from an outlining or a plotting perspective, it's still something that I think, number one, it's hugely valuable to be consciously aware of it. Just in the back of your mind, you understand, you know, what is it that creates a correctly structured novel. But also because, I mean, you can always go back after you've written your first draft and double check yourself and say, oh, well, you know, here's this plot point. I could move it up or strengthen it or, you know, that sort of thing. So I definitely, even though the approach isn't the same for pantsers as it is for plotters, you know, it's definitely just as valuable.
Thank you. Other questions?
Hi, Katie. I have a question.
Go ahead.
So you talked about scenes and sequels and sequences, and I'm not quite sure how those fall into chapter divisions and how you make that decision.
Okay, that's actually a really good question. It can be, I do not like the classic designations for scene and sequel. I think they're really confusing. And part of that is because you get scene, little scene, like the half of the scene, confused with the big scene. And also because you know, when we talk about scenes, you know, we tend to think about these kind of more arbitrary divisions in a book, which are, you know, scene breaks and chapter breaks. And truthfully, breaks and chapter breaks, you know, that we see on the page actually have very little bearing on scene structure or sequence structure. You know, you can break a scene or a chapter, you know, anywhere within the structure of the scene. You know, whatever's going to give you the most dramatic or, you know, the best hook to keep readers reading. Which can be, you know, it's kind of confusing to get your head around at first just because the terms, you know, are so interchangeable. But it's important to realize that actually, you know, the chapter breaks, scene breaks have nothing to do with the structure. A lot of times it'll make sense to break, you know, at the end of the structure, you know, particularly often at the end of a scene disasters, the end of the scene half of the scene is a great place to end just because it's often a good hook. But it has, you know, no bearing on the structure.
Thank you.
And Katie, how do you kind of figure that out? Like, how do you, I mean, is it just trial and error or kind of looking at and shifting the chapter breaks after you've written your draft? How do you kind of figure out those two things?
To some extent, it's just kind of instinctive. You know, it's like, well this feels like a good break. To some extent, it's going to be dependent on word count, since, you know, it's generally a good idea to have your chapters be similar length. But like I said, a lot of times it works right to break in the middle of the big scene, you know, after the scene half of the scene. So you've got your character goes through his goal conflict, and then you've got the disaster. And the disaster is a great hook, you know, because then readers are wondering, how's this character going to react to this? And then, of course, leads right into the sequel, which is a good way to open the next chapter.
That's great. Thank you. Other questions? We have a few more minutes left, so if anybody has a question, this is a great time to ask it. So are you currently working on a new novel?
Yes, definitely. I actually just finished a historical steampunk novel. I have another historical that's kind of in the editing back burner. And then one of these days after I recover from having written the last book, I have a time travel paranormal story set within the modern world, which would be kind of different and fun for me to do.
Time travel / paranormal in the modern world.
Yeah, it's that one's still, you know, cooking in the pre-outlining stage, so I'm still figuring out exactly what it's going to be about.
Oh, that's great. And can you talk a little bit, and if anybody has a question, please just barge in, but I'm curious a little bit to hear about your writing schedule. What kind of, how do you structure your days?
Okay. Well, I am, you know, lucky enough that I'm able to write full-time. I'm not an early riser. You know, 7:30 is about as good as I get. So I get up and then spend my mornings taking care of personal stuff. And then about middle of the morning is when I start focusing on email, social media. I spend my mornings mostly doing what I would consider marketing stuff, like blogs, podcasts, that sort of thing, odds and ends. And then I like to divide my afternoons in half. The first half is just sort of for whatever kind of non-writing big project I've got going on. I'm working on a webinar for Writer's Digest, and I just finished doing that. That would have been the first half of my afternoon segment. And then the second half, you know, from 4 to 6 is when I write. And that, I mean, that's kind of, it's like, you know, sacrosanct. I've trained everybody I know to leave me alone during that time. So I do just use of a machete and a flamethrower. But then, so then I eat supper, you know, walk the dog, whatever, and then check email one more time, and, you know, that's pretty much my day.
Wow. That's wonderful.
I've got a question.
Yeah,
I've got a question. I'd love to hear what Cam has to say about the structure of a character. Can you say anything about, like, building, what goes into building a character?
Okay, so are you talking about, like, character personality, or are we talking, like, character arc?
Well, I suppose both. I'm in the situation where I've got a wonderful story, but I haven't cast it yet. I haven't decided who that main character is. What goes into building a strong character?
Okay. Well, this would be something that, to start with, I would definitely point you toward the character interview questionnaire, which, like I said, you can get for free and by signing up for my mailing list, and it will be in that the free ebook that you'll get. And that's like a list of like 100 questions that, you know, I mean, you can answer as few or as many as you want. But the idea is to really plumb the depths of this person. You know, and this, of course, is if you're starting out with an idea of the character to begin with. And if you're not, then you're going to want to, I would recommend you stepping back and make a list of characters that you have really enjoyed, that have really connected with you and touched you in, you know, books and movies. And then start writing a list of why. Why is this character connected with you? What traits are, you know, that pulled you in? And start thinking about how you can add that to a character. As for character arc, you know, I can't tell you that all. It's too involved to go into right now. But I do have a post on a blog, which I will send the link to Rochelle, and maybe she can send that out in the email. But it's about how character arc ties into the overall plot structure, and which was also a really interesting discovery for me, because it's very interesting how the rise and fall of the action in our plot is directly tied into the rise and fall of the character's transformation over the course of the story. And again, you know, just ebook that you'll get by signing up for the mailing list is all about, you know, crafting. It's called Crafting Unforgettable Characters. So I'm sure that you'll find some interesting angles in that as well.
And everybody, look for the email I send you either later this week or early next about the recording, and I'll have all these links for you so that you can easily access Katie's books and all of her great resources. So this is the time typically when I ask you to share a final piece of wisdom with us, something that's going to kind of help us move through our writing day.
Well, the one thing I always like to emphasize to writers is that we all have to find our own path, which sounds really nebulous and airy-fairy, but, you know, someone who's teaching how to write, I think it's really important to emphasize that rules and guidelines and techniques aside, writing is always going to be a deeply personal and deeply individual pursuit. It is so easy and so dangerous to get caught up in following expert advice. And that's great. I mean, I think it's really important and valuable to reach out and study the craft and read books and blogs and listen to classes like this one and see how other writers are doing it. Because, you know, writing can be a kind of a lonely journey in which you don't always know if you're doing it right. You're not getting the kind of feedback you want. You don't really have a mentor to guide you. So, yeah, definitely pay attention to what's working for other people. But at the same time, don't get so caught up in Simon Says that you're kind of blown around on every wind of doctrine. You know, read, listen, experiment with the processes that have worked for other writers. You always want to come back to what works for you. If something doesn't work for you, you know, like say outlining doesn't work for you, then by all means, don't do it. Writing is hard enough, you know, when you're in sync with yourself. So in short, I would just encourage writers to seek the processes and methods that are best going to allow them, as individuals, to tap into their creativity and their best story.
That's great. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
K.M. Weiland's new book is Structuring Your Novel. Her website is helpingwritersbecomeauthors.com. Probably on Friday or Monday, I'll be sending you a link to the interview today, a link to all of her resources, and of course a reminder about next month's class, which will be October 23rd, and I'll be interviewing Angela Ackerman, author of The Emotion Thesaurus and The Positive Trait Thesaurus, and we're going to be talking about character development. So if you're still working on your plot points and all of that and your scene structure and your sequel and your scene sequences, that will be a good time to learn a little bit more about your character. So thanks again for being with us, everybody. Remember to always write. This is Rochelle, the Write Now Coach. Thanks, and have a great day. Bye.